Next, it's the Tech Help phone in with Fevzi Turkup. So what would you like to know about the technology you're using much more of in these weird times? Any tech question you've got, Fevzi will do his best to answer it next. 0808 100 5100.
The Andrew Peach Show.
BBC.
Radio Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire 8:41, Saturday morning. Andrew with you until 10 this morning. Now, though, our tech help phoning with Fevzi Turkup. Morning, Fevzi.
Morning.
Good morning. How are you keeping in amongst all this?
Very well, thank you. I'm continuing to be fit and healthy.
Because you do a lot of working from home anyway. Are you basically stopping in, or are you going out and mixing with other people wearing your mask?
No, I wear the mask when I go out walking, but other than that, I'm just stopping in.
Doing his stuff from home.
I have everything here. I mean, you know.
You're so well connected, you see.
I think I said to you before, it was several weeks before I'd noticed I'd been locked in. So, you know, what can I tell you?
Why does this track and trace thing not work? We were told it was going to be world-beating, the best thing ever. Why do we still not have a technological answer to, have I been near someone with coronavirus?
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, they are just introducing it into Northern Ireland as we speak. But yeah. Part of the reason it doesn't work is because the government decided to go its own way and have a centralised track and trace system. That's to say, where they hold all the data and it all comes to them. And there were issues with that because that was contrary to the way that Apple and Google had facilitated track and trace by providing tools and building it into their operating system. So they built it into Android and iOS. So all the government had to do was, you know, use those underlying bits of code and add their stuff on top. But rather than do that, they went their own way. Then they realized that wasn't very good. And they probably realized that the take-up of it would be low as well, I suspect. And so they scrapped it. And now they're just being slow and inefficient, frankly. Other countries have got this working better. It's not that it's perfect, Andrew. It's just that it's better than not doing it. But the other thing is, the track and trace apps only work effectively if you have sufficient testing. Because, you know, these two things have to go together. Because if you can't test people sufficiently, then people are either going to record themselves as being ill because they've got symptoms but actually don't have coronavirus, or perhaps more likely, they have no symptoms but they're ill, but because they haven't been tested, you know, routinely, they don't know. And therefore, it reduces the effectiveness. The more testing you do alongside a track and trace app, the better. It is not that using Bluetooth to detect proximity to another person's Bluetooth phone is a little bit tricky, but it will tend to give false negatives rather than false positives.
Yeah, so that's what I think. It's kind of been, maybe it will end up with too many people being asked to isolate. That seems to be the biggest risk, that you sort of, you know, it tells you, you know, this is an example from weeks ago, but it tells you when you've been, you know, next to someone at traffic lights who was in a different vehicle, who was physically quite close to you but couldn't possibly have given you their coronavirus because there were, you know, many sheets of metal and glass between you. It might just mean you self-isolating, that sort of situation, but it's better than not having it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, yes, it is, and I think the technology is good enough to say it's better than not having it. It's not a sort of silver bullet, but it's another tool in the armory, but the testing is really important, you know, and we're not doing enough testing.
0808 100 5100, whatever your tech question, let's hear it between now and 10 this morning. Love to hear from you. We're all using this technology to keep in touch with our friends and family, the Skype, the Zoom, all of that. We've got a lot more time to do internet streaming, to play around with our photographs. Is there any point having a camera anymore that's not part of your phone?
Yeah, there is. Smartphones have sort of wiped out the sort of sub-£100 level cameras, you know, the little cameras we used to have with, you know, either film or digital in them. There's not really much point in having a separate camera that's got that, other than the fact it sort of saves your battery. There are so many benefits. Even though the little sensors, you know, the bits that collect the light in a smartphone, is very small compared to a sort of regular digital camera, they're getting better, and they more than make up for the digital processing that they do. So the way that they process it, you know, we're getting to age of what's called computational photography, where let's say your lens is not perfect and it creates what's called barrel distortion. You know, you've seen pictures where the building bows at the side when you've got a wide angle lens and stuff. It can actually correct that before it saves it. You know, it can actually just do the mathematics and say, that looks like a building. I think the edges should be straight. I'm going to correct it. So what you know, when they say the camera doesn't lie, it not only lies, but it does it with aplomb. You know, it uses technology to reinterpret what the lens has actually seen. But to answer your question, there is a point, but only if you're sort of have a specialist need. If you're a photography enthusiast, and there's still, you know, great benefits to having digital SLRs because they've got interchangeable lenses, they've got huge sensor sizes, they can shoot great video as well. You know, you can do a great job. All the sort of things in the middle, the mirrorless cameras, which have got a lot of the features of digital SLRs but don't have the flip-up mirror, so they can be smaller, they can still have interchangeable lenses. If you're into photography, those are still valid choices. But if you just want sort of happy snappy, and you would otherwise have carried a camera that was under £100, then no, not really worth
then
it.
Then basically, yeah, you stick with your phone. Because what I found in the end, and it might just be that I had too cheap a camera or too old a camera or whatever, it just became utterly frustrating that you can't then upload the photo anywhere. You know, you can take a photo, it records it on an SD card, but there's no 4G connection, at least there wasn't in my camera, to be able to then put it on Facebook or upload, you know, put it in a cloud or storage anywhere or anything. So that the whole process of doing that with leads and the laptops was so cumbersome. I've just started using my phone for all photography now.
Yeah, you can get all sorts of cameras now. I mean, they tend not to be the entry-level ones, but I've got a small compact Sony camera that has Wi-Fi built into it. So when I've taken the pictures, I zap them wirelessly. I don't have to take the SD card out, which is convenient because sometimes the SD card slot is blocked by other things if you've got sort of extra gizmos attached to your camera. So yeah, you can get ones with Wi-Fi that connect to the internet. There's even ones where you can download additional functions into it via the internet and update the firmware and all of that. So they do that. I mean, the cameras are playing catch up. The advantage that the phones have got is, first of all, watching great screens, so it's much easier to see what's going on and what you're going to take a picture of, you know, and also just the power of the processor and the connectivity, as you say. So the disadvantage they have is a tiny sensor. And that is being overcome. Every year there's a new iPhone and there's new smartphones. The cameras get better. They get more lenses. I think we're going to start to see cameras with built-in gimbals. Remember, we looked at a gimbal the other way. A gimbal.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Do you remember, like in the old days, they used to call them steady cams. They were these great big devices that were strapped to the chest and waist of a camera operative. When they were shooting films, and they could like walk and run with this device on, but you had to be quite strong to do it. Now we talked last week about the sort of handheld gimbals. Now we're going to see the first smartphones, not only with image stabilization, but true three-axis gimbals built into phones. And we may see zoom lenses built into phones more frequently as well. That's another, you know, weakness of the smartphones. So step by step, they're getting better, and they're already good enough for the majority of people who are not photography enthusiasts.
0808 100 5 100. A lot of young people who haven't needed one until now will have to have a device of some sort, whether it's a laptop or a Chromebook or something, to go back to school next month. Schools seem to be preparing to me for the possibility that kids won't be able to come the whole time, you know, in the autumn term or whatever. They're preparing for all eventualities and saying, get a device. Where would you start if you're being asked to, you know, to go and get something that's not too expensive, that's going to be robust, if it's being carried around in a school bag the whole time, but will have some basic functionality in terms of being able to do some schoolwork on it? What would you look at?
So the first thing I'd say is listen to the advice coming from the particular school, because they may have particular requirements. For example, they may say must run Windows or something like that, because if it doesn't have to run Windows and it's just going to be web-based, you know, browser-based, then a Chromebook would do. So a Chromebook is something that runs an operating system called Chrome OS, which is essentially Google's Chrome browser with a few add-ons. So you don't install programs on it in the way that you install on a Windows or a laptop or a Macintosh machine. Everything runs over the internet. So they're pretty well, can be not very useful once you don't have an internet connection. So be aware, it doesn't allow you to install Word, but you can run Word, you know, online and things like that. So get the advice initially, get something with a decent size screen and keyboard, something that you're going to be able to work on, you know, not too tiny. If cost is a consideration, consider a Chromebook, but only if your school says it's all right, because not only are they a little bit cheaper than Windows laptops, but they're also much easier to maintain, because you don't install programs on it, the viruses and so forth can't really install on it, and the software gets automatically updated at the other end, at the server end. So you don't have to worry about maintenance. So if you're not very computer savvy, and most kids are actually more so than most adults, but if you're not very computer savvy, then that's a way of doing it. If you want cheap, Chromebook is a way of doing it. Otherwise, look for a laptop computer. Think about if you need to use it whilst out and about, if you are going to use it in class as well as, you know, at home, then have consideration of the battery life. Go for one of the modern ones. Don't go for a second hand if you can avoid it, or an older model, because one of the big benefits that's happened in the last year to 2 years is that the processors are much more energy efficient and they give you much more battery life. And that's kind of key if you are going to be using it in a classroom situation. Maybe on certain days you'll need it to last, you know, 8 hours plus. You can do that. Tablets are an option, but the problem with tablets is they tend not to have, keyboards, physical keyboards built into them. And if you're writing essays and so forth, I think that is a bit of a disadvantage, although you can get Bluetooth keyboards, but it tends to be a bit sort of Heath Robinson. You've got the tablet and that separately. Better to get yourself something with a laptop form factor, much more usable, in my opinion.
Interesting. 0808 100 5100. If you've got a question about cameras, about the sort of technology young people might need to go back to school next month, whatever's on your mind, put the call in now. Let's talk about this vacuum cleaner. I love this. This is a vacuum robot that you can get, which will sort of do all the cleaning without you needing to do it yourself.
Yeah, so it's called the Eufy, EUFY, that's a brand, and it's a RoboVac G30 Edge. So it's a Eufy RoboVac G30 Edge. I love this. It's a size and shape of a pizza. It's just over 12 inches circular. It's just over 12 inches in diameter and 2.85 inches tall, so less than 3 inches tall. And it's a robotic vacuum cleaner. You set it going and it vacuums rooms. It wanders around your house vacuuming. It doesn't go up and downstairs, but it will stay on one story. Talking of not going up and downstairs, when it's working upstairs, it detects an edge. So if it comes to the foot of the stairs, as they say, it will detect that there's a precipice below it and turn back, so it won't tumble down the staircase, which is kind of useful. The edge bit in the name refers to the fact that it comes with these special strips that you can attach to the floor to indicate areas where it should not clean. So for example, if you've got a sort of toddler's play area, you might not want the vacuum cleaner wandering into that area. So it detects that edge and it backs away and it just cleans everywhere else. It's got good integration, so it will work with Google and Amazon voice control. So you'll be able to say to it, Alexa, tell the RoboVac to start vacuuming, and it will do. It integrates quite closely with the app, so you can see when it's cleaning, where it's cleaned, what it's still got to do. You can control it manually. You can just take it over. You'll have seen, and I don't advocate this, but there are a lot of videos on YouTube of people putting their cats on it and driving it around the kitchen. The cats don't seem to mind, generally speaking, but it's kind of a strange thing to watch. But it's become a whole genre. You know, there's all these sort of subgenres,
like a sort of TikTok genre kind of thing.
Yeah, people like to do that. In terms of the suction capability, it's 2,000 pascals, which means it's good for a device of this format. The way that I use these sorts of devices is I run them sort of every day through the day, through the week, and then once a week get out the sort of manual vacuum cleaner, which means that everything stays sort of presentable throughout the week. It doesn't get, so the carpet doesn't get increasingly tatty, but once a week it gets a full clean. But
so you're making it sound like it's not that great at doing it, though. I mean, the technology is fantastic, don't get me wrong.
I'm a bit fussy, so some people will just have this as their sole vacuum cleaner. But even then, you see, it doesn't do the stairs. So you still would need at least a smaller handheld thing to do the stairs with. But also, the benefit is, you know, stuff doesn't get trodden into the carpet during the week. It, you know, just gets taken care of. This device is very smart. I love the fact that, for example, when it's running down the battery, it speaks to you. It says that, you know, it's running low on battery. It goes and finds its charging bay and plugs itself in until it gets to 80%. And then it comes out and carries on with the cleaning job. So I think it's really good. And also the fact that it's less than 3 inches tall, which is sort of shorter than a lot of its competitors, means that it can go under, for example, a lot of beds and vacuum under beds and sofas and so forth, and areas that are, you know, if you've got a dodgy back or whatever, it's hard to get to sometimes those areas, and it does that. So I like the fact it does that. I like the integration with the app. That works well. Its navigation is smarter as well. So what it does is it works out more efficiently how to cover an entire room, an entire carpet in the minimum time, which is useful. The runtime is about 100 minutes on a charge, which is, again, is about twice that of some of its competitors. So overall, I've given it 4-star rating. Price, list price is $339, but there's, I think, until tomorrow, there's about 15% off voucher. If you want it, you can get 15% off that price. Mm. But
this is the same tech as the mower, presumably. There's a mower that does this same sort of thing, isn't there, where you know, you determine the area you want mowed, yeah, and then you just leave the thing to do it. It must be the same technology driving it.
Well, yeah, I mean, the algorithms are derived from military use, things that look for landmines, where it has to make sure it covers. You have these robots that go around landmines again, trying to get blown up, essentially. And what they do is, the essential things for a landmine detector is that it must cover the whole area, but it should do so, you know, with the minimum number of sweeps and times. And the algorithms that they use for that are very similar to the algorithms that are used, as you say, for lawnmowers and also for these sorts of robot vacuum cleaners.
Looked at the mower once because I just love the idea of this, but it was really expensive. And one of them, they might have come down a bit maybe because it was probably two or 3 years ago. But I did look at one of these mowers once. And I thought, well, I can't pay that for a mower.
Yeah, well, so this unit with the, say, for, you know, just under £300 with the reduction, that puts it at sort of low to medium price range for these. Some of these devices are a lot more expensive, and I'm not really convinced that you get, you know, commensurately higher performance from them. I think that this is a good compromise. It's got the little edge brushes as well, because one of the problems with these sorts of devices is, you imagine if the rollers are only, you know, the collection is only inside the disc, as it goes along you know, the wall, it wouldn't otherwise be able to grab anything from, you know, the few inches next to the wall as it goes along. But this thing's got edge brushes as well. Again, that's why it's called the G30 Edge. Mm. You know, all in all, a good implementation. There's been quite a few generations of these products from Eufy. They have others in their range. But it's getting to the point where it's quite a mature product and quite usable. The first ones, I think, were a bit sort of gimmicky, bit novelty, but this generation is truly useful, and I think, as I say, my opinion is the best way to use it is in concert with at least a handheld cleaner, or if not a full vacuum cleaner.
Interesting. Fevzi, thank you very much for this morning. Fevzi Turkalp, our gadget detective.